You can connect Apple Watch to Apple Watch with a new technology called Digital Touch. You can also tap your watch to get your friend's attention. And you can even send your heartbeat. This is an incredibly intimate way to tell someone you're thinking about them. I'm hoping someone sends me one of those.
Hello and welcome to the Cultcast, the most erotic Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, two manly men I just can't wait to share my heartbeat with, Leander Caney and Buster Hein. Gentlemen.
Hello. Hey, Erfan.
This is the oddest Cultcast intro I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was the worst intro ever.
I may actually have to agree with you there. Although, I think version one, like the very, very first Cultcast.
You were doing your Stever impression?
My Stever impression. I do have a pretty killer Stever impression. That was my sexy R&B Cultcast intro. I thought it was quite erotic. And it kicks us off appropriately, I think, because we're going to be talking about digital heartbeats on the Apple iWatch. And I was saying that jokingly, but I can't wait to share my heartbeat with you, Buster, every day. And Leander, too.
You know what I can't wait to do?
Is draw pics of things that I don't want to see and send them to me.
Yeah, mostly dick pics, but yeah.
You know what? That is literally going to be what is mostly sent on those Apple Watches.
When I saw that like the first time back in September, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to draw penises to all my friends.
That's literally what it's going to be for the first 3 months. Because, yeah. I mean, the only people that we're going to know that actually have Apple Watches are going to be journalist-type people and then our kind of like tech-savvy friends.
Right.
I don't know any like non-Apple enthusiasts that are actually going to buy the Apple Watch. It's just going to be you, me, and Leander.
Right.
It's going to be it. Well, we're going to be talking about everything from the Spring Forward event. We have our sticks ready, and we're going to beat this horse down until there's just nothing left. We're going to cover everything, every product that was talked about ad nauseum. Hope you guys are ready for it. And you know what I like about actually covering this stuff a few days after the event is we've done shows right after an event has happened. You don't know anything about the products at all. So I kind of feel like we actually have a little bit of perspective on the products now and a bit more information than just whatever Apple is telling us.
Leander's talking about the gold watch, it seems.
Yeah, we're gonna listen to Leander. Leander is going to start a class war here because he's not happy about the gold Apple watches and their incredibly high price tags. And of course, we'll be talking about the new MacBooks resurrected from the ashes, that the MacBook is back. But I kind of wonder, and I'll be interested to hear what you think, Buster, who this machine is actually for. Because for the price, it doesn't seem like something for the everyday man. But then it's really sleek and thin, so maybe tech journalists will want it. But I don't really understand who the audience is here for this machine. So hopefully you can fill us in. We're also going to be talking about HBO Now coming exclusively to Apple, well, at least for 3 months, and how awesome that's going to be. But before we jump into all the deliciousness and eroticism, I want to say thank you to FreshBooks for supporting this episode. Super happy to have FreshBooks back. FreshBooks, of course, the easy-to-use invoicing software that's designed to help small businesses and entrepreneurs get organized and save time invoicing and get paid faster. I can vouch for this. I personally use FreshBooks and it saves a ton of time and also makes tax time very easy. Try it out yourself over at freshbooks.com/cultcast. And I also want to thank Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace 7, the all-new Squarespace 7, doesn't just have a redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps. They also give you a bunch of tools to update your website on the go and view your metrics from wherever you are right on your iPhone. Try out the new Squarespace free for 2 weeks. They don't even need your credit card information. Head on over to squarespace.com. And if you like what you see, enter code CULTCAST at checkout for 10% off any order. Buster, let's start with this.
Okay.
I hope that this doesn't actually end up being true. But you wrote a piece on Cultimac that Apple quietly killed its glowing MacBook logo at the Spring Forward event. To which my heart broke slightly because I actually really like the glowing logo, and I was hoping they were going to add it to like the iPad and stuff too. So do you think this is going to be just for the MacBook, or do you think it's going to come to all the computers?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder why they killed it. I'm guessing for thinness, and I wouldn't be surprised if they kill it eventually.
For all machines?
Yeah, I'm like the Mac Pro and like the MacBook Air. Once those get redesigned to be even thinner like the new MacBooks.
I think the MacBook Air definitely has a target on it for removal of the glowing logo. But for the MacBook Pro and, well, I guess it would just be the MacBook Pro at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, the MacBook Pro, I don't think they're going to slim it down to MacBook size. It's probably going to remain a beefier machine just because it has to have a lot more battery in it to, you know, support the graphics card. But I really like the glowing Apple logo. I don't want them to remove it. It's kind of a cool thing that they do. And it's copied all over the place. It seems like a bad move to get rid of it. Leander, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I like those pictures where they have it at, you know, college campuses or Microsoft press events when everyone's got their laptops open and it's a bunch of glowing apples. In fact, there was a beautiful one that we posted up yesterday, I think, that was taken at the Spring Forward event of all the glowing logos.
Of glowing logos from the audience?
Actually, no, it was something else. It was everyone's faces all bathed in this like blue light from their open laptops. Oh, okay. Like everybody had an open laptop, but it was a really cool effect. Uh-huh. You can imagine the logo.
I'm imagining it now. It looks incredible. Tears are coming to my eyes.
Yeah, I know. It is, isn't it? It is. I don't know. You know, like people said the same thing when the rainbow logo was changed.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you look at the rainbow logo now and you go, oh my God, you know, that's kind of...
I kind of like it.
You still like it?
I kind of like it, but I do like the white one more, I would say.
Yeah. You know, so it's in line with it. I never wanted a glowing logo on my iPad or anything like that. I'm quite happy with the silver shiny one. It looks pretty classy.
Right.
It's, you know, I can get over it, I think.
Yeah, I don't know, but you pay that premium for Apple devices. You need everyone to know how important you are.
That's a fanboy thing. Yeah.
That's why I'm going to get a gold Apple Watch, Leander, because I need people to know that my office smells of rich mahogany. Yeah, right. And that I'm more important than they are. Wouldn't you agree? Isn't that something that you want in your own life, Leander?
Well, I was just watching that video of how they made the gold, and I'm like, I kind of want one. But could you imagine what Tracy would do to me if... if I drop 10 grand on a watch. Watch?
No, but I'd like to find out. If you do it, can you have one of your kids film it when you do the big reveal? She'd probably just grab your ear and march you back to the Apple store and try to return it like a 10-year-old kid.
Right, or my body, yeah. Sans a few parts.
So let's talk about the gold Apple Watch edition. We're going to talk about all the things that we like and don't like about the Apple Watch, of course. But Leander wrote a piece in Culta Mac about how the gold version, the $10,000 gold version, really wound him up. And Leander, I'm just going to let you go with it. What was it about that really irked you?
Well, you know, in the past, Apple has always made, you know, sort of one product for everybody, from the Apple II, the Mac, the iPod. You know, of course, you know, there was several different versions, but it was basically, you know, one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
With a Mac, right? You know, mm-hmm. You couldn't get a gold Mac. It came in plastic. And yeah, you could get more RAM or you could get a bigger hard drive. But, you know, if you paid extra money, you got extra functionality. And, you know, with the gold watch, they're clearly differentiating it from the rest of the line. It's functionally exactly the same as the aluminum or the steel one. The difference being, of course, you know, that it's made of gold. But the big difference really is that it costs $10,000, and that only
at least $10,000.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And more like 17.
Uh huh.
That's with a plastic band, right? So, yeah. You know, like it's only there for people with enough, you know, with the disposable income to buy it. And,
right.
And that's its only, well, you know, this is what I initially thought, right? This is what irked me. You know, it's only there for people for those that can afford it. And for those that can afford it, it's only, you know, it's the only reason to buy it is for its status, is to broadcast, you know, that I've got more money than you. And that just bugged me. And it was—it's antithetical to everything that Apple's done, you know, and everything Apple stood for, and Steve Jobs, you know, philosophy, and the fact that he was a hippie kid growing up in California, and he wanted to democratize technology. And this is so antithetical to that vision. This is what bugged me.
Can I read you something that you included in your piece? This is a Steve Jobs quote. You said, and this is Steve Jobs speaking, "I watched people at Apple who made a lot of money and felt they had to live differently. Some of them bought a Rolls Royce and various houses, each with a house manager and then someone to manage the house managers. Jeez. Their wives got plastic surgery and they turned into these bizarre people." I love the way he phrases that. "This was not how I wanted to live. It's crazy. I made a promise to myself that I was not going to let this money ruin my life." So that was the Steve Jobs quote that you included. And then here they are kind of creating a product for that exact group of people.
Yeah. And, you know, in that piece, there was a little bit of that, you know, I conflated because, of course, towards the end of his life, you know, Jobs famously lived in a mansion, right, with nothing in it. He had a mattress on the floor and, you know, he had a BMW motorbike in one corner and a grand piano in the other. And he was, you know, very, very, you know, Buddhist in his approach to sort of possessions and objects, at least when he was young. You know, he just wanted to have a record player. And what was that quote he had? You know, you just need a record player and some tea and you've got everything you need. And there's plenty of other quotes of him when he's young. Like, you know, I think he had a really, really, you know, for someone who's so rich, and had so many resources, you know, had some very interesting things to say about money. And it was like, one of them that really resonated with me was all my favorite things in life don't cost any money. And he was talking, I guess, about, you know, hanging out with his family, sexy time with his wife, music, you know, all these kind of pleasures. But then, of course, as he got older, you know, he built this gigantic yacht.
That's true. He did build that mega yacht. That's right. Because I was thinking about his house, and his house really isn't anything extravagant, I don't think.
Well, I don't know. It is. It is.
I don't know. For someone that has as much money as he did, is it, though? I mean, Bill Gates' house was famously way, 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 way huge, and it was super high tech, and you had to wear Star Trek badges to go around, and all the rooms would adjust to like your preferences and stuff. And like Steve Jobs just seemed like he was a nice big house, but it was just a normal house.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice big house, and it's in Palo Alto, and you know, it's not exactly
It's not very exclusive. It seems very neighborly, but like all of his neighbors are billionaires too.
Yeah, and actually, funny enough, I went. You know, there's some kind of frat house across the street. I think
is there?
It's so weird. It had like sheets hanging in the window. It didn't have curtains. I just sort of sheets hanging in the windows, and then these flags everywhere.
I think I might want to rush.
There was actually, when I was doing research for the story, there was a pretty, Reed, his son, said that whenever they went, it used to go to Larry Ellison's place. That was when they visited their rich friend, Larry.
Doesn't Larry Ellison have like a sex dungeon? Isn't he the guy with the sex dungeon? I thought it was the guy who owned Oracle, which is Larry Ellison.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
He was like super eccentric and had like a sex dungeon. I don't know. Anyway, sorry. Obviously, his tastes, the things that he was interested in are not free.
Yeah, right. And he has yachts and he had a big estate in Atherton, I think. And I met this crane driver one time, and the crane driver said, "Yeah, I was just doing some work down at Larry's place." And he said, "I was moving trees." Like, and he said Larry was standing on his porch with a pair of binoculars, and he was saying, "Yeah, left a bit. Okay, right, put it right there." So, you know, I think compared to those guys, he was pretty modest.
What's that, Buster?
Larry Ellison, he owns a Hawaiian island. I mean, he's just like the most, like, I don't know, flamboyant about his wealth.
Flamboyant, yeah, good word.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so Jobs is always a lot more, you know, he wasn't so flamboyant about his wealth. But obviously towards the end of his life, you know, he flew a private jet. He didn't really go, you know, drink beer with the boys, right, either, right? He was never really one of the guys. And did have expensive tastes, you know. I think he didn't, you know, he, you know, the mask they put on his face in the hospital offended him, right? Because it wasn't well designed. You know, everything was very rarefied. And I think, you know, I think the same is obviously true for Johnny Ive. And there were some interesting quotes in that New Yorker article. And they didn't really expand on it, but it said that there was a point when he wanted to, before the iPhone took off, you know, he bought a mansion in the UK and he wanted to retire. And his dream was to, you know, team up with Mark Newsom, and they'd make luxury items, you know, together into, you know, into the, as a sunset. And, just that, you know, what was so great about Apple all the way through the Johnny Ive era and the Jobs era, and this came absolutely from Jobs' vision, was to bring great, you know, the kind of stuff that only rich people could afford and make it affordable for everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the best designed, the best made objects. And the only reason we can afford them is because they're churned out in their hundreds of millions. Mm-hmm. And isn't that the genius of Apple? Isn't that what makes that company great? And isn't it wrong? Isn't it so fundamentally wrong for them to make, you know,
good save, yeah,
a few, you know, one-offs for rich people?
But I think they kind of accomplished what you're saying is they were trying to make these devices that only rich people could afford ubiquitous. And they are. I can own an Apple Watch for $350 if I want one. And it's exactly the same as the watch that you'll be wearing, the $17,000 rose gold Apple Watch. Except yours is like the rich man's version. It has materials that I mean, even if I had the money to buy that, I wouldn't. But mm-hmm. it's the version that, you know, if you want to spend more money because it's more jewelry-like, then you could. So I guess for me, that's the way I look at it, is the devices are inherently the same. If you want to own one that's more expensive, you can, but guys like us can own the $350 version.
Yeah, but that's exactly true. And I think there's some other good, and that is exactly why they're doing it, and some other good reasons as well, to do with like price anchoring and mm-hmm. to do with, you know, I think it's also like a really interesting, you know, this is something you wear, right? So it's a lot more difficult to get this to become a mainstream product. And I think the gold watch has a lot to do with that. They have to make it aspirational. And I think they're going to give it away to, you know, sports stars and celebrities. You know, Kanye's going to get one. Kim's going to get one. Kobe's going to get one. And, you know, you see those guys wearing them. And then it's like, oh, my God, I'd love to get, you know, one of those. But, you know, I can't afford $10,000, $70,000. But I can afford the $350 one. And, uh-huh. you know, because, like, if you look at how every piece of – it's wearable. It's a wearable. And uh-huh. that's the hardest problem, I think, in technology, to get someone – to get, you know, everyone to adopt a wearable. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Google bombed so bad, like, with the glass. And Pebble, you know, and all the other smart watches, they're so geeky.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get the Pebble at all.
Yeah. Right. It's a watch for a geek, for a nerd. It's not something only nerds could wear. But this is the last
thing. So if you're wearing a Pebble right now, Leander Caney just calls you out. You nerd. Take that off, you nerd. You take those headphones out. We're done here.
But to go back to your point before, you know, like, I think yeah. if you wanted to get, like, that is the problem, right? That was the beauty of the iPhone. Like, and that quote, there was a great quote from Andy Warhol there that said, you know, what America did in consumerism, the great thing about American capitalism is that, you know, everybody could get Coke and everyone liked Coke. And, you know, Liz Taylor would drink a Coke and the President of the United States would drink a Coke. And you knew that the Coke you were drinking was good enough for the present, it was good enough for Liz Taylor, and my God, it was good enough for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's something beautifully democratic about that. And it's just like America, you know, like America has a lot of problems, but this isn't one of them, you know. Uh-huh. This is why Apple did the gold iPhone, because anyone can get an iPhone. Gold watch. Anyone can get an iPhone, but you know, the problem is, I think, for rich people, the people who have disposable income, is the last thing they want is the same iPhone that all the hoi polloi have.
Right.
Right. So, mm-hmm. and you know, so what they would do is they go to sort of come like Virtu or some other customizing company, and they get it covered in solid gold.
Swarovski crystals. Yeah, right.
Right. And they get a custom one that was like, that was super expensive. And, uh-huh. you know, but this is why, you know, I was looking at that company Virtu, which was a British company, been gone for about 10 years now. And they sold like customized Nokias. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these things don't have internet. They don't do messages. You know, they barely can make a phone call. But people would not care. They would still spend tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars on one that was made out of solid gold or covered in jewels, simply because it cost $100,000. And there was only one of them in the world. And, you know, and they don't care if it's obsolete or the technology is completely secondary. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even part of the equation, in fact. It's just that, you know, they had a phone that was made out of gold. That's all that mattered.
Right. It's interesting because when you do have a lot of money, I would imagine that at a certain point, you just wouldn't look at things under a certain price point in different categories. And I realize there's different levels of wealth out there. Some people are frugal. Some people are very, you know, like extravagant and in your face. But for someone that really cares to have something flashy, maybe they just are willing to spend more money and they don't care about the technology. The technology. They just want it to look a certain way. And they're like, well, $10,000 seems about right for something that has a level of prestige that I'm looking for, right? Or $17,000.
Yeah,
because they're looking at watches that might cost, I mean, don't some Rolexes cost well above 17, maybe 50 even? I've heard some luxury watches cost like $100,000.
Oh, more than that, 250 or even half a million.
Really? Wow.
And that's what I was wondering is like, is, you know, I think 17,000 actually would be kind of cheap.
It does seem cheap for like a Kanye West, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he drops that, he wouldn't even stop to pick it up. He would just keep walking.
That's his, like, you know, that's his champagne bill for one night at the
like,
club. Right?
That's like one bottle of champagne. He's taking it easy that night if it's only 17K.
Exactly.
He's just going to have one drink and go.
It's almost pretty close to, I think, the cost of the materials. You know, I think some people calculated that, you know, at least 10,000, I think, is, you know, there's almost $10,000 worth of gold in the thing. So I think that's what people said. So
I think you're right. There's an element of this that is just price anchoring. They're going to give it away to celebrities. They're going to make them super exclusive. And it's going to be that model that makes the versions that are less expensive more accessible, right? You're right. Like, oh, well, the steel one's only, you know, $800.
Yeah,
I might just get that one, right?
Right, exactly.
Because it's not 17K.
Right.
So, well, let's move on to the other Apple watches. So let's kind of just breeze through some of these features and we could chat more about them. So the price, $349 for the 38 millimeter, $399 for the 42 millimeter. That's for the sport. That's the one I'm going for. I'm going to guess you guys are going to go for the same one. Yeah.
Yeah.
The cheapest one I can get into.
Right.
I think the white sport one is actually the best looking one too.
You think? I like the black one.
Yeah. I've heard from a lot of people. They like the black one.
The blacked out steel one.
Yeah,
I think they're going to sell a ton of those things.
Yeah,
I was surprised that the steel version came in at a base price of $549. I thought it was going to be way more than that for sure.
Yeah, me too.
That seems to be not much higher at all than the aluminum version. Of course, now we get into the bands, right? And this is the mind-boggling part. So all of a sudden, you used to have like Apple would famously say you could fit all their devices onto one table, right? And I guess you probably still could, but there's 38 different versions of the Apple Watch, including the bands. So there's all of a sudden, I feel like it just got incredibly complicated. And now there's always different color choices for all their different computers. And this is the first device that Steve Jobs hasn't really been involved in at all, even from conception. And it kind of makes my ears have perked up a little bit because I'm kind of wondering, all of a sudden, are things going to start getting a lot more complicated at Apple? Are they going to start releasing like a lot of different products and not just keep it simple?
Well, there's also like a rumor they're going to add more colors. iPhone 6 is going to come in pink gold next too. I don't know. Yeah, I do see what you're saying with there's just too many options. How do you keep the whole product line flowing well with all these options? I don't think it's that big of a deal with the watch though. I think you need all those custom options and everything.
I see your point because everyone's going to have a different taste, right? And it, because it is a fashion item, they have to have a bunch of different looks to it. But 38 different versions of this one watch. It's essentially the exact, well, it is. It's the same watch. You can just customize the material it's made from and all the different bands.
See,
so it's kind of mind-boggling all the different choices that you have.
See, I think that's like kind of a selling point of it. The main, one of the big selling points of Apple Watch is that it's so customizable.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you got like the Moto X watch or any of the other Samsung watches, it comes in just one color, one size, and or maybe two different sizes. But yeah, it's not personalizable.
Yeah, it's not at all. Well, the Moto isn't. So we go from $549 to $1,100 for the steel version, $10,000 to $17,000 for the El Caney edition. That's the one he'll be wearing around San Francisco as he smokes his cigarette from one of those long pipe things and twirls his mustache at us. pre-orders April 10th, delivers April 24th. We're thinking the ships April 24th. I think it's going to probably get to people April 24th.
Probably.
But they let you go into the Apple Store now and or the Apple Store app and select the model that you think is best for you, so you can favorite your favorite model. So it's ready to be ordered.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah.
Do you guys didn't go through and do that?
No, I haven't done that. That's clever, though. I'm sure they're collecting that data, right? Are they collecting that data?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they are. Yeah.
For the orders, yeah.
And for the first time ever, the Apple Watch, because, you know, like MacBooks, when they ship and actually get to people's doors, that's when they show up in stores. Well, with the Apple Watch, it's going to be in stores on April 10th. So you have 2 weeks to go in there, check it out, have some, you know, guy making $10 an hour show you a $17,000 watch and tell you why it's the right one for you. I actually kind of wonder if they're even going to have the gold version.
No, they're not. They haven't said, but I'm pretty sure they're not going
to. That doesn't make any sense. They would need to have that. I think it's going to be available, what, at Nordstrom's?
Retailers and stuff, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's going to be high-end retailers. They're not going to be have. They're not going to have.
Not some. Nordstrom's. They're talking about Selfridges in London and Colette in Paris. It's like, you know, select boutiques,
the really high-end places,
right? Exactly. And with like probably security. one or two per city. And it's going to be in, you know, London, New York, Dubai, you know.
Can you imagine some pimpled covered teen telling you why you need to own the $17,000? Sir, I think this looks really great on you. Right. You care to try it out? I'll put it on your wrist.
Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, right. And then someone bumps you. Yeah, you know, somebody just comes in. He smells a bit fruity. And, yeah, there's no way. It's going to be like behind, it's, you know, some super really sweet smelling boutique.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be fresh, faraway spices being infused into the air.
They hand you a cocktail as you come in through
the
door.
Oh, yeah. And a hot rag to wipe your face down from right. from the sweat of all the plebeians outside. Yeah. So let's talk about features. We are going to get Apple's at about 18 hours of battery life. That's actually pretty good. And I would imagine for most people that will work most, that will last them all day. I thought this was funny. So according to Apple's tests, that 18-hour battery life includes 90 time checks, 90 notifications, and 45 minutes of app use. So you can look at your time 90 times throughout the day, but don't do it more than that because that's going to eat through your battery and maybe you won't make it through the rest of the day. And I guess, having not used one, but from what I've seen, when you raise the watch, it activates. And at that point, the screen comes on. Does that sound right, guys?
Yeah.
Okay. And Apple's saying the 42-millimeter version typically gets longer battery life. No surprise there. I would guess they're probably going to include a little bit of extra battery in there. Here's the surprising thing about this event. I don't feel like they told us anything that we didn't already know.
Other than pricing
and when it was going to be available. Did they say anything in the entire keynote about that surprised you? Did they mention anything about apps? Did they mention anything about additional functionality? It kind of just seems like they still don't know exactly what this thing is going to do and who is meant to be using it. I still don't feel like there's a compelling reason to get one of these aside from the fact that we're going to be talking about it on the show. Is it any disagreements?
Well, yeah, I think they're passing out information, just as they did before. You know, they've got a very careful plan for, you know, introducing it. There's a press event, right? So yeah. They want to manage the message and you know, I thought the most interesting thing was that he said, "Oh yeah, by the way, the gold one's going to cost $10,000." Okay, time to move on.
Yeah, you want to slip that in there real fast,
right? And you know, there's a lot of other there's a ton of questions, but. This really was to pique interest, right? And they want to get people downloading the app. They want to see what kind of bands people and, you know, what which devices and which bands people are choosing, and then they're going to gauge the interest in the stores and they'll do the pre-orders. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think they've been very judicious about withholding information. And there's a ton of unnecessary questions. And this obviously this isn't really the I don't think the Apple Watch that they wanted to ship initially. I don't think it does anywhere near the, the number of health monitoring that they want to do.
I don't think so either. I think they really had to cut back and this isn't the vision they had for it. I think you're right.
Right, and I think there's going to be a bunch of sensors that are going to come in. You know, the second and third generation. They're going to make it much more compelling and much more almost essential. I think. You know, I think. Plus, you know, all the different use cases haven't been, you know, there's a whole third-party app thing. You know, who knows what there's going to, you know, if there's going to be some kind of killer app for it.
I kind of feel like they don't even know.
No,
I really don't think they do. I mean, they're like, it's going to have an app store. And then that was kind of it. They didn't bring any developers up on stage. And I mean, look at it. We were watching a spring forward event, right? It was named after the Apple Watch. And we didn't even talk about the watch until almost an hour into the event.
Yeah. True.
It and was they a bit... filled the entire thing with other stuff. I thought that was a little bit strange.
Right. That's true. Yeah. Right. It was.
At the same time, I don't think Apple had a great vision of what the iPhone, like what the killer app for the iPhone was going to be when they released it.
That's a good point. Yeah. Remember, Steve Jobs didn't even, I mean, we take the App Store for granted now, but Steve Jobs wanted them to be web apps.
Right.
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 Well, there was good reason to be an App Store. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, the App Store didn't come until, 2 years later?
Mm-hmm. 1 year, yeah.
Was it? Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, they didn't. It reminded me a lot of the iPhone introduction with the three things. The iPhone, it's like a revolutionary communicator, and then iPod and blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think they don't want to overwhelm. It's obviously going to has a ton of potential. It could be a ton of different things. Really more, like it's not really a watch. It's actually a computer on your wrist.
It's like a telephone on your wrist too.
Right, and does so many different things. I mean, it's really, really flexible. But of course, that could easily become overwhelming, right? And I think they're hoping that people will find that the watch, the timekeeping, the fact that it's a great watch with Mickey Mouse faces will be enough to initially get people interested in buying it.
I think that's like the least interesting feature.
The different faces?
I don't know. The Mickey Mouse thing was I couldn't believe how much time we were spending on that.
Yeah, and a bunch of people cheered. when they showed that on stage.
I think that was it's a positioning decision, right? They want to make it familiar. It's the same as the iPhone was. It's like, okay, this is a watch when it really isn't. And so they made it look like a watch, and that's the thing they're going to talk about. But it'll probably be the one thing that people use it for the least. But it doesn't matter. It's a way of just introducing it, making it familiar. It's good for a headline. I mean, no one has. There's no category here, right, for them to compare it to. Mm-hmm. This is brand new territory, mm-hmm. a brand new device. The first time anyone's tried to make a mass market wearable. And so, calling it a watch and highlighting the watch features, is a good way to make, it's like shorthand, it's just a way to get people initially interested. But there's no way they're going to be talking about that in 2 or 3, years.
Yeah, I think you're right. This is just the beginning, and there's going to be a lot of features that are going to be fleshed out in the future. And before we move on, I thought it was really funny when Tim Cook was talking about, you can read your email on the phone or on your watch, y'all. And he starts scrolling through the email, and I just rolled my eyes. I was like, you got to be effing kidding me. Who is going to – this is what I've been saying the whole time. If they come out and start showing you things on the watch that you can do on your phone, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Why would you want to read an email on your watch when you have a big, beautiful iPhone 6 Plus in your pocket that you could use to read the email? Just seem totally bizarre?
Why would you want to check your email when you have a big, beautiful Mac over on your desk that you can look at?
Well, I don't bring my big, beautiful Mac with me everywhere.
Well, I don't want to bring my big, beautiful iPhone out of my pocket every 5 seconds to see all the shit that I get every day.
Plus, it's hard to get your iPhone out of your pocket with the jeans we wear.
Well, my iPhone's buzzing, right, all day. Notification. And so to the point now where I completely ignore it, except for the times when I want to go check it. But I think if you had some of those notifications on your wrist, it's super easy to glance down at them and see the ones the ones you want to actually react to.
Until you give those enough priority where they start making it on your phone too, and you're like, great, now I need another device.
Right, yeah, that's true. I mean, you've got to be judicious about what you're going to get, but.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people talk about that. Like the Apple Watch's biggest feature is that it saves you time from your iPhone, and that's horrible if Apple's selling you the iPhone, which is such a huge time suck that you need a second device to buy to get away from it.
Right. Exactly. That seems like a great solution.
It is. It is horrible. But I also just think that's just where we're going. That's where society is going. Technology is going everywhere. Sensors are going everywhere in your clothes, your house, everything. So I think you need more tools at your disposal to interact with, the crazy high-tech world that we have now.
I think the most exciting part of the Apple Watch for me is the future aspect of it, is paying for things with your wrist, having it unlock the doors at your house when you get home and adjust your heat accordingly. That's the stuff. That's where we're headed, and that stuff is really exciting to me. All the sensors and stuff that are communicating with devices I have in my home and in my life, that's what I think is really cool. Not reading my emails on my wrist and not necessarily getting notifications on my wrist. Other people may find that useful. I don't. But the stuff that they showed where your or when Tim Cook talked about, you know, going up to your Apple car or whatever and unlocks the doors. I'm paraphrasing here, obviously. That seems really awesome to me. And I do think that's what the Apple Watch is going to be key for in 3 to 4 years.
Right.
Yeah. When it hits version 4. Okay. Before we move on, I want to pass the mic to L. Caney for his debut. Normally, it's me talking about our CultCast sponsors. And I just have to say, I'm delighted to hand the mic to Senor Caney to talk about FreshBooks, because he's going to delight us all and tell us about FreshBooks. Mr. Caney, you use FreshBooks. I use FreshBooks. Buster uses FreshBooks. Please tell us more about it.
Thank you for that. So yeah, FreshBooks is sponsoring this episode of the CultCast. Indeed. And you can get a free copy to try out today by going to FreshBooks.com/CultCast and then put in the box, how did you hear about us? Please put CultCast so they know where you're coming
from. Can I just add something real quick to that, Leander? Sure. So yeah, please, no matter what website you're signing up for, just put CultCast in the how did you hear about us section. It doesn't matter if we haven't promoted them before. It doesn't matter. It just it helps us. It lets them know that if they're not supporting us, maybe they should be. Right. So exactly. if you're ever asked, where did you hear about this? Maybe you're at the mall. Hey, great jeans. Where'd you get those? I heard about them from the CultCast. Right. Please, just feel free to credit us.
Good tip there.
Yeah, no problem. Please continue.
Well, you know, I actually do use FreshBooks, and I've used it for a long time, and I use it both to send invoices to get money for you know, for the Cult of Mac blog and for the CultCast, mm-hmm. and also, like, you know, people bill me for me to pay them through FreshBooks, and the experience on both ends of the chain has always been great. I mean, you know, the beauty of the thing is that it's so easy to use. And it's easy to set up an invoice. It's easier to keep sending that same, you know, to send a version of that same invoice, because you tend to invoice the same people
right
over and over again. So it's dead easy to send, you know, to set up an invoice and then invoice that person. You know, even if I do it manually, so I do it, you know, every month, I put in a couple of numbers and I hit send and off it goes. And then when you get the invoice, it's very easy to pay from within the invoice. Mm-hmm. And you can use all these different payment methods, you know, PayPal, credit cards. So it's very easy to send money back. I've always found it really easy to use and, like, you know, very, very straightforward, no problems at all, very, very convenient.
Yeah, the UI is incredible. It's very easy to navigate, very easy to use, and it helps you get paid faster because you're not having to send out, you know, paper invoices. People can get their invoices via email, and like Leander said, they can use their credit card to pay you, and they can use their bank account to pay you. And in fact, one of my favorite features is FreshBooks has a partnership with PayPal. And you can accept PayPal business payments. And normally, you know, PayPal takes like a 3 or 4% fee if someone pays you with a credit card. Well, if you initiate PayPal business payments on your account and someone pays you that way, PayPal just takes 50 cents. So imagine if you're sending out an invoice. Most of my invoices are for like $20,000, $40,000, you know, for my time, my consulting time, where I help people, you know, that's just what my time is worth and people right. agree with me. So I always send out large invoices. Well, you know, 4% of a $40,000 bill. What is that, Leander? Right. That's like $17,000. Right? Is my math good there?
Right there? Yeah, exactly.
and if you use PayPal business payments, it would only be 50 cents. It's a very, very small fee.
It's
and
a steal. Yeah.
I think one of the best times a year to use FreshBooks is obviously now during tax time, because if you are using FreshBooks throughout your year to send your invoices, to do your time tracking and your expense tracking, then once tax time comes, you're all set. All you have to do is export some stuff for your accountant and you're done. Your tax time is over because you've been diligent all throughout your year. Right. If people want to try out FreshBooks, Leander, where should they head?
Yeah, so go to FreshBooks.com, FreshBooks, FreshBooks.com/ CultCast. /CultCast, one word, yep. CultCast, FreshBooks.com/CultCast. And then don't forget to, how did you hear about us? There's a section there. Please put in CultCast.
Yeah, please do, because that way they know that you heard about them via us and they will continue supporting us. I want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. Okay, let's move on. Unless anyone has anything profound they want to add about the Apple Watch before we move on, guys, anyone?
Nah.
Okay. Oh, Actually, can I add a couple things? Yeah. these are important, actually. So,
is it related to AT&T and your bandwidth? And...
yeah, it's actually about net neutrality. Okay. So just bear with me for a moment. So a couple quick things about the Apple Watch that we didn't mention, but I think we should. So Apple says to charge the watch from 0 to 100% will take about 2.5 hours, and to reach 80% about 1.5 hours. So if you wanted to charge this at night, you could certainly do that. But you could also just keep it on at night and charge it at your desk. You know.
Well, that's what people are saying. How does it do sleep tracking?
I don't think it does sleep tracking at all.
Yeah, it does.
Someone's going to make an app.
You're right. Yeah. Someone probably will make an app, huh? That's a good point. Because that was one of the things about the Apple Watch that I was sorely missing. I haven't heard them talk about sleep tracking at all. So I think it's probably going to have to come via a third-party app. I don't think Apple's including any functionality. Buster, do you know?
I thought they said that at the first keynote, but maybe I forgot.
Yeah, I don't remember them talking about that. But that's one of the things that, you know, I kind of want if I'm going to wear a watch 24/7.
I just expect it. You think it's bunk?
Yeah, it's, you know, it doesn't give you any actionable data. It's like you look at it and you go, oh yeah, you know, like I was tossing it and then.
That's actually a good point. I mean, the data it gives you really isn't all that useful, aside from the fact that you're like, oh yeah, I need to sleep more.
Right. And yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like it's almost completely and utterly worthless. It's useless beyond measure.
there you have it, folks. I was wrong and I apologize. The other thing is, it seems like it's going to have about 8 gigabytes of storage. And I think 2 gigabytes of that can be used for music and 75 megabytes can be used for photos. So you're obviously not going to be storing a lot of your nudie pics on your Apple Watch.
Yeah,
but you can do 2 gigs of music. That's like an iPod Shuffle.
I thought it was interesting that they didn't mention one single spec.
Oh yeah, they haven't published the spec sheet at all.
And yeah, it's not being marked. I mean, like, this is the first tech product that I can remember where it hasn't mentioned any specs. You know, for anything.
Probably because it's a watch. It's not a computer, right? Right. Wink, wink.
Don't you have to reveal the spec sheet at the time of purchase or something like that? Don't you have to make that public, I think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do? I don't know.
Everybody makes it public, so I feel like it's just got to be.
Well, they do it because it was, you know, and tech has always been marketed, right, on, you know, the technology, on the you know, the speeds and feeds. But
right, but they're not selling this as technology. They're selling it as jewelry, right? It's wearable.
Well,
jewelry.
More like a lifestyle accessory, isn't it? So it's like, you know, the technology is completely irrelevant. And no one's going to compete. No one's going to come out with another watch and say, oh, ours is faster. Who cares?
It kind of makes me wonder if they're going to upgrade it every year or take like a 2-year upgrade cycle.
That's a super interesting question. I was trying to think about that. Yeah. What is the upgrade cycle going to be?
I think
maybe even longer. And they'll just update the software every year and have some iOS update for it. Yeah, they haven't talked about that at all. It'd be interesting to see what they do with that.
Well, they've done it every year. I think, you know, like Steve Jobs said, you know, he was very, very firmly a believer in innovating before someone else out-innovates you, right? They get, you know, do it. What was the term you used? Like, you know, cannibalize, wasn't it? Cannibalizing your own market before someone else does it for you.
Yes, that sounds right.
And they've been really aggressive. You know, when the iPod era, they were coming out with, when they updating one of the other iPods every 6 months or so? Mm. Or was it a year? Annually.
I think it was a year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So annually, every year. Although wouldn't they release spec bumps quietly during the year?
Sometimes.
Yeah, I think it was coming thick and fast because, you know, like there was the iPod and the Mini came out like a few months after an updated iPod. And, you know, every time they had a Shuffle and a Mini and a Classic and a blah, 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 you know, it seemed like it was they were adding new iPods a lot. Yeah.
Leander's on his scooter. Leander's on his scooter riding down San Francisco Way. Sorry. Okay, let's move on, guys. Let's talk about the MacBooks. Buster, before I head your way and ask you about why this MacBook isn't for us, it's for the future. I want to read this quick little excerpt from David Pierce from Wired, who was at the events. Saw the MacBook, and this summed up at least how I feel about it. The new MacBooks feel a bit like the Apple Watch. It's beautiful. It's a status symbol. I'd be desperate to show everyone I know, but it's kind of expensive. It's a little underpowered for such an expensive laptop, and it feels a little like a device without a market beyond the curious and the early adopter. And that is spot on how I feel. I mean, this thing seems a little underpowered. It has the Intel Core M processor in it. the MacBook Airs seem like they're as powerful, if not a little bit more powerful. And yet, it's highly desirable. It's super thin. It's 2 pounds. It's the thinnest Mac they've ever made. It has the Retina display that we've wanted to see come to the MacBook Airs for a while. And when we've talked about this specific machine, historically, we thought it was going to be $500-$600. It was going to be something very inexpensive for students, what have you, because of its low capabilities, you know, from a specs perspective. But it's not. It's actually quite expensive. Buster, who is this machine for?
For rich people. Like, no, not really. I mean, like David Pierce says, like early adopters, it's a lot like the same type of people that bought the original MacBook Air, I think, is like a great analogy for the new MacBook. You know, it launched without the optical drive, which was just insane at the time, and people thought it was crazy expensive and it only had one port, and so you needed all kinds of dongles for it. But 2 years later, you know, Apple dropped the price and added all kinds of features, and it's, you know, everybody's favorite notebook now. So I think that's kind of like the same trajectory that this one's going on.
Leander, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't agree at all. I think it's got crazy lust factor. Mm-hmm. And I think it is going to appeal to a lot of people. I mean, it's a perfect computer for most people. You know, it's not the cheapest, but it's a lot less expensive than the original MacBook Air.
No, well, but MacBook Air right now is cheaper and gives you more horsepower. If you are going to spend $1,300 on an expensive computer, you're going to buy the MacBook Pro, which also has a Retina display, the Force Touch trackpad, I think. I don't know.
Sorry, but I think people are looking at the wrong specs. I mean, like, because, you know, when does, like, for most tasks, you know, like for browsing the web, for, you know, writing email, for watching videos, you know, I don't think, when has the chip ever held you back? You know, the problem I get is I have too many tabs open and, you know, the machine starts to choke and flash, you know, crashes. And, you know, what I need is more RAM, not a faster processor. I haven't thought about the processor speed for a long, long time. And I know it makes a difference, but, you know, I'm more interested in things like the battery life, the resolution of the screen, the portability, and the networking, right? The speed of the Wi-Fi. And, you know, the thing I miss is, like, I wish they put a 4G LTE chip in there.
Yeah,
I'd love to be able to put, you know, like, but you know, that actually doesn't really matter because I can just you know, run it off my iPhone anyway.
So it sounds like you might be willing to buy something like this.
Oh my God, yeah, you know, I want it so bad, it's unbelievable.
So even though it's more expensive than the MacBook Air, you would be willing to buy this instead.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, totally.
See, that's interesting.
Absolutely, because it's the size of the thing that is really what does
and
it.
And the
for me.
Sleekness factor of it for you,
right.
Those justify the extra cost. Because I mean, exactly. I think the argument is that people who want a powerful computer wouldn't buy this, and people who don't want a powerful computer wouldn't buy this because it's too expensive, right? They can buy a MacBook Air for, you know, $800.
Yeah.
So that kind of leaves that gap. Well, who is this for? Well, it's for El Caney. Leander Caney is going to buy like 100 of these things.
I don't know. I think people, you know, this event, I mean, everyone was really losing their beans over the new MacBook.
Losing their beans. Oh my gosh. What happened? I just lost my beans.
people are really, I think a lot of people really want this. It's got that crazy, crazy lust factor.
It does. I'm not denying that at all. It's a sexy machine.
And it's
erotic, even. What's that?
It's in gold, too.
And it's available in gold. So, you know, Alex is going to want it. And it's got the Retina... what I'm trying to say is it has the Retina screen, which, as you all know, once you get rid of any device that doesn't have it, just makes you sick. You just want to swat it out of your hand, right?
Right. Yep.
You don't want to use something that's non-Retina. So let's talk about one of the other... I don't want to say controversial, might be the wrong word, but, you know, slightly so, is the lack of any ports. They're going with USB-C, which is able to charge the computer. It's able to transfer, you know, data as fast as Thunderbolt 1. Here's another interesting point. USB-C power is actually reversible. So if you had your iPad plugged in to your MacBook, technically speaking, you could actually charge your MacBook from the iPad, which would be pretty cool. But now we're back into the situation where you have to have adapters for everything. And maybe people don't need to buy as many adapters as I think they're going to need. But the three adapters that I saw from Apple, one was for like HDMI, one was for VGA, I think, and then another one was just USB. Both the VGA and the HDMI were $70 each.
Really?
$70 for the adapters.
Dang.
Yeah. And of course, you're not going to be able to use other USB accessories while you're charging the computer because the USB-C is responsible for charging the computer. So now you need to unplug your computer from power to like plug in your, you know, your SD card reader, which may not be a big deal. I don't know if it is or not.
Well, don't most cameras now, aren't they adding like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth to cameras so you can do wireless transfers?
I guess a lot of consumers... Because you're tight. I guess a lot.
I think it came out both ends, yeah. Didn't it?
Do you need to take a trip to the men's room, Buster, and clean up?
Right.
Okay. I think you're right, Buster. I think that a lot of them do have Wi-Fi. But, you know, transferring via cable is always much faster.
Right, yeah. I just think that's, you know, where the future is heading anyway.
Yeah, but AirDrop's great, you know, and it's super easy to use. It's a lot better than finding a plug to plug it in. The big problem is, the only thing I always plug in is my iPhone into my MacBook, and then overnight, you know, like if you're traveling or something like that, you charge the MacBook and then you charge your iPhone at the same time.
So you would need to purchase Apple's, I think it's either $20 or $29, their USB adapter, which you plug into your computer, and then I believe it has one or two extra USB ports.
It's like a pass-through thing.
It's a pass-through thing, exactly.
Yeah, okay, that sounds fine. Yeah, that's not too bad.
So you could do that. So that doesn't bug you at all, just that one port, Leander, so that you'd have
No, I think it's great. I mean, the biggest problem is like having wires dangling off your computer everywhere, right? I got the beautiful Mac here.
Yeah.
You see in front of an iMac, and the thing, you know, you look behind, and it's a spaghetti factory. It's horrible.
And it has no glowing Apple logo, which we've already determined that Leander Caney doesn't care about. But... I think the other big thing, and this is a big deal for me, no MagSafe. How many times have you tripped over your computer wire and had it come undone because you have MagSafe and not brought your computer crashing to the ground?
Yeah,
you're not
going
to have that anymore. Leander literally happens to Leander every day.
Every day, yeah. One of the kids or the dog or the cat.
Right.
Yeah.
It happens to me all the time too. And now you're going to lose that. I kind of wonder, they didn't mention anything about this. I wonder if they're going to have some like magnetized tip for their USB-C adapter, or if it's just going to pull the port out when you trip over it.
Yeah, good question. Either it slides out buttery smooth, or there's some kind of MagSafe connector like in the wire or at the other end. You know?
Oh, yeah, maybe there are. Well, you think they would have mentioned that though?
Yeah, right. The MagSafe was great. I thought it was an amazing innovation.
I kind of hope they don't bring this technology to other computers.
Like what? I hope they bring the USB-C ports to the MacBook Pro soon.
In lieu of the MagSafe adapter?
Oh, not. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I'm fine with that as long as they have three USB-C ports on there.
Oh, I don't. I really hope they don't do this.
I'm fine carrying a dongle, yeah, as long as you give me a couple extra ports or something.
I just bought dongles. I don't want to buy any more damn dongles. For my FireWire connection, for my Thunderbolt connection, for my Thunderbolt drives, all of a sudden you'd have to have all these different dongles again. I kind of hope that they're reserving this connection to just this one computer because it's so light and thin. What do you guys think?
I think they're going to bring it to everything, possibly even the iPhone.
So you think they're going to replace Lightning with this too?
Yeah, possibly.
Wow.
Huh.
That's interesting. I mean, this is a non-Apple technology, right? It's USB-C. Yeah. It's universal. So it would, in some ways, it would actually be great because accessories for your devices would be made by everyone and not proprietary to Apple.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really hope they don't do this. I kind of like the setup I have now. And they just started pushing Thunderbolt, 3 years ago? And now all of a sudden to move off of it?
I know, but they also did FireWire, too, and they killed that one pretty quickly as well.
I know FireWire was around for a long time. That was
had
a decade or more, I think.
Yeah. In fact, I still use my FireWire drives.
Wasn't there some... I thought there was some other protocol that they did invent and killed pretty quickly as well, but I don't know.
Anyway, I want to talk more about the MacBook, but before we continue, I want to say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace has been with us for quite a long time, probably like a couple years now. And I love telling people about Squarespace because if you need a website, you absolutely need to check Squarespace out. Head over to squarespace.com and you can get started with a 2-week free trial. They don't even need your credit card information. But let me tell you why I like Squarespace. It's because Squarespace is for doers. If you need a website, you don't want to pay a developer or, you know, try to hook some friend who knows how to code into building your website. You can do it all by yourself. You don't need anyone's help. You can just dive in there and start building your website because everything in Squarespace is drag and drop, and they've created it so that it's very intuitive to use, and you'll be bolting your website together as you go. And not only is it going to be highly functional, it's going to look fantastic because Squarespace's templates have been designed to look good, but they also have been designed to look good on any device that visits. So that could be your Mac, that could be your iPhone. Any device that visits your website is going to look great. But more than that, Squarespace gives you some tools to manage your website that no one else gives you. For example, if you create a Squarespace blog, you could use their blog app on your iPhone to blog on the go. You could use their metrics app to keep track of all the different visitors that are showing up at your website. You can use their portfolio app. This is actually really cool and innovative. If you're a photographer, you could use their portfolio app to sync galleries on your website to your actual device. So if someone goes to your website, they can see all the different images that you have there. And then when they meet with you in person, you'll have all those same images on your phone that you can show them. And you don't even need a internet connection. It just syncs everything so that it's there whenever you want to view those images. So it's good if you want to show images to clients, or maybe you just want to share your photos with your family members. You can do that as well. And when you're building your website, you want to make sure that the layout is right and looks good on all these different devices. In Squarespace 7, they introduced Device View, which allows you to minimize the browser window so you can see what your website is going to look like on different devices. So if you shrink it a certain amount, it'll start to look like a tablet, and it'll show your website what your website's going to look like on an iPad. Shrink it more, the template will change again, and it will show you what it looks like to browse your website on an iPhone, so you have a really good idea on what needs to change or how you want to tweak stuff. No one else gives you features like this, and these are just some of the plethora of features that Squarespace offers you, all for under 10 bucks a month. Check it out, squarespace.com. And if you like what you see, if you want to continue your free trial, please enter CultCast at checkout. You'll save 10% off any order. That could be a month service, a year of service. It doesn't matter. And you'll also get a free domain name if you do a year of service. At squarespace.com, I want to thank them for sponsoring this episode. Let's talk about Force Touch and butterfly keys. Normally I'm a scissor guy. I like to scissor. Yeah. But this butterfly thing looks like it might be something that might be up my alley. Although it hasn't been getting very good press, I have to say.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So actually let's start with that since I'm already talking about it. So Apple spent a bunch of time talking about how scissor keyboards are for cavemen basically. And anyone who's civilized and pronounces it aluminium needs to have the butterfly keys that they've invented. And it basically makes the keyboard more shallow, and so there's less travel when you type on the keys, and also makes it so that they, you know, don't bend and wobble as you hit them, which is a problem I never actually thought that I had. But some people are complaining that they actually don't like the new keyboard. Going back to David Pierce from Wired, he said there's basically no travel, no movements. It's not that different from tapping on a touchscreen. Sean Hollister from Gizmodo said, as hard as Apple tried to create a fancy new keyboard and make it thin, this one felt pretty off to me, pretty off to my experienced laptop, reviewed fingers. Gosh, I butchered that. My apologies. What have you guys heard about the butterfly method? Anything?
Are we talking about the keyboard or the trackpad?
We're still talking about the keyboard. I know it feels like it went totally off the rails there, but I'm steering us back. So the keyboard, the really shallow keyboard. Have you guys heard anything good?
No, just negative stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer. So I kind of like shallow keys. This is probably going to be, this is obviously going to be very subjective, but one of the things I love about the MacBook is how shallow it is to type on the keyboard. Because you know, like when you do like a Dell keyboard, it kind of gives me carpal tunnel. I don't like it. But
this is going to go even further down, though.
So, yeah, I mean, David Pierce said it's like typing on a touchscreen. I don't like that one bit.
Yeah, that's why I thought, man, I kind of do like a bit of action. Like, even the clicky keyboards are not that bad.
I heard that you were just scissoring. And I was worried when I heard this is going butterfly, because I'm like, well, Buster's not going to like it.
Not at all.
But I never thought there was anything wrong with the scissor method. I mean, I'm typing on my MacBook now. It feels great. Let's talk about the Force Touch. Not to beat that joke to death. Let's move on to the Force Touch trackpad. I'm kind of interested to see how well this works too. So Force Touch trackpad measures force touch on the trackpad. And the trackpad on the new MacBook is not mechanical at all, as you guys probably all know. It's just going to be flat, and they've integrated their Taptic engine to kind of give you some vibration type feedback when you click on the trackpad, which I actually like, haptic feedback. Uh-huh. Are you guys into that sort of thing?
I don't know. Well, it's going to be all over the Apple Watch, and it's going to be on the iPhone 6S, so I better get used to it.
And I bet you anything, like, it's coming to the MacBook Pro too.
Yeah, I think it's like the next dimension of what Apple's doing with touch.
Yeah, right. I think you might be right. And they're going to add a whole new dimension of actual touches that will be interpreted by your device in all sorts of different ways. And they've already added this to the 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah, which I was really happy to see that, because the new MacBook Pro got everything that I wanted. So I might have to update to that.
The 13?
Yeah.
Well, what is it that you want that you thought was so great? Just the keyboard and the trackpad?
Well, it just got a processor update, but it also got like the new trackpad, which is nice. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. You know, the only other thing that you'd be waiting for is like USB-C on it.
And maybe I'm not waiting for that.
Yeah, me either. So I'm like, oh, I think it's a pretty good buy now.
Yeah, it does look like a really great machine. The trackpad and also the keyboard, I've heard some good things about the trackpad, not very many good things about the keyboard, but I still want to try it myself. I might really love it. There's no way to know, right?
Store.
But I thought it was interesting that they did not update the 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Oh, with the trackpad as well?
Yeah. They didn't give it any updates at all, did they?
No, not at all.
My dogs are going crazy in the background. I apologize.
Is that the UPS man?
Yeah, UPS guy's here. And he's been marked for death by my dogs. They're not happy about that at all. Yeah, so no updates at all on the 15-inch MacBook Pro. Kind of curious, don't you think? 13-inch got updated. The MacBook Airs got updated. The new MacBook's out.
I don't know. Maybe at WWDC. I really wasn't expecting any MacBook announcements. So.
We weren't at all.
Yeah. But
do you think this could indicate that they're going to do a drastic maybe. Refresh?
Yeah, possibly.
Because why else would they not have at least, you know, given it like a soft update or something?
Yeah,
or brought the new the Force Touch trackpad to it?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
I have all sorts of Star Wars jokes coming to mind now. All righty. Well, I think that is it as far as Macs are concerned. Let's wrap up with this conversation. HBO Now announced right at the top of the keynote is going to be Apple exclusive, $15 a month, which... seems great. I know there's people complaining that they're annoyed that HBO is coming to Apple exclusively, but I think it's a really smart move for HBO. I mean, it's only going to be 3 months, right? But HBO is trying to get out of the stranglehold of the cable operators, and now they have Apple welcoming them with open arms, and they're going to have access to all of Apple's customers. Plus, they're adding a entirely new Apple TV channel. Right, Buster?
Yeah.
And so I think what's interesting is there was a price cut to the Apple TV. They brought it down to $69. It was $99.
Right.
To me, this kind of implies they're doing something.
What do you mean?
Well, why bring it down to $69? Why now? It's been out for so long.
I think so. Everybody will go buy an Apple TV and get HBO Now with it.
So
to make that more appealing, I think.
And you might be right. That might be all there is to it. But
there might be like a big update coming this year too. So that, you know, could help them move the rest of
their industry. Trying to just clear out inventory. Yeah. I was thinking it could make space for something that's a little bit more expensive. Not an Apple television, but a more robust Apple TV, like a piece of hardware that does a lot more of what Apple's trying to do. Because
a console?
yeah, maybe like a TiVo type thing or something. I don't know.
You're going to mention TiVo. Who's going to, but no one records shows anymore.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it would be for recording shows or if it would just do more than the Apple TV currently does. I don't know. I just think it's weird that they are dropping the price on this so much at this time, that's so late in the game. But maybe that's just how it works because they want to move units.
There was a rumor that they're coming out with a thinner Apple TV with the App Store sometime this year, that it's in the works. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I definitely think that could be a big part of the play. With HBO now being exclusive, I just think they want to get everybody to buy an Apple TV that they can in the next 3 months, so they're making it as cheap as possible.
I know. I don't have
they
one.
They should be giving it away, or they should make it $25 or $10 or something
50
crazy.
$50. Just, you know, yeah, it could be cheaper for sure.
See, that's kind of another reason why I'm like, well, it makes sense that maybe they're making space to have a higher priced item. So maybe they're going to release something for $200. And
I don't know.
No. I don't know. I'm just.
If Apple released like a new Apple TV, it would have to be have like some really cool stuff to make you want to buy it for $200. When like you got the Roku and the Fire TV, they both have awesome channels. You know, that Apple TV doesn't even have.
Yeah, they do. But you know, Apple is kind of on the cusp of getting all that content they so desire and have been working on for so long.
I think they just need to hurry up because I'm seriously about to go buy a Fire TV.
The Fire TV stick? I have one of those actually.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
do you like it?
It's cool. I mean, it's kind of like I used it for maybe 2 weeks and then I stopped because I have a Chromecast. I have a great media PC. It's a nice device. Don't get me wrong.
There's just been so much expectation for the Apple TV for so many years, and nothing's really changed too much, even since like the first generation one, where you could actually like you had a whole hard drive and could download stuff to it. Like it just hasn't changed too much in like the last 5 years. I just think they're due for something big soon.
They are. They're due for something that just builds up
I'm
my
just
point,
like,
Buster.
Gosh,
you're
it,
just
come on, man.
you're just validating my point. We're due for something big, and I think it's going to have to be more expensive than what they're charging now. What is it going to do? I have no idea. I have no idea. But we are due for something big, and Apple is on the cusp of accomplishing exactly what they wanted. I mean, now that HBO is releasing themselves from the grip of Comcast and all these other, you know, cable television providers, Apple could get all the content that they want and could be your portal to all the content that you want on demand. And that's the way we're moving now more than ever. We're at this point where we're able to actually get the content that we want on demand with Netflix and with HBO now. I just think we could see something big in the next 12 to 24 months. And you can quote me on that. You quote me on that, C-Net.
12 to 24 months?
Airfan Elijah says...
Scoop city right there.
That's a scoop. That scoop is free charge, gentlemen. Airfan Elijah says, we could expect something to happen in the next 12 to 24 months in the Apple world, Apple TV world. Glad that's all I'm trying to say. Okay.
Well, that's why people come to the Cultcast for analysis like that.
Expert analysis at its finest. Don't come after me, CNET. Don't come after me, Wall Street Journal. I already have a job, and I'm satisfied. All right. With that, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. I almost, like, just kept going off and giving you guys even more scoops, but I don't think you guys can handle it.
So yeah, save it for next week.
I'll save it for next week. I've got to spread this stuff out. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to hear even more of our scoops, come hang out with us on Twitter. Leander's L. Caney, Buster's BST3R. I'm at Aerophon. And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos of the world of Apple, make sure you're checking out at Cult of Mac. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Brought back the sexy voice for that. Picking it up with a couple sexy notches. All right.
I gotta pee so bad, I gotta go.
Just go in your pants. That's what us professionals do, Leander.
I know, I don't have a diaper. I forgot it.
I've already gone number one and number two since we've done the show. Jeez, you need to pro up here.
All right, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just wear a cloth.
I guess it depends on Amazon.
Us big boys, we just go in our pants.